This is Poetry on the Move. In this, our last episode of Poetry on the Move for 2016, we offer readings taken in and around the various events at the Poetry on the Move Festival, recently hosted by the University of Canberra. We'll hear another reading from poet-in-residence Simon Armitage towards the end of the program, but we'll also hear readings from fellow poet-in-residence Tusiata Avia and other guest poets Dominique Heck, Merlinda Bobbis, and Samuel Wagan Watson. But first, Dominique Heck. Born in the French-speaking part of Belgium, Dominique Heck has spent most of her life in Australia. Her work crosses disciplines, genres, and languages, resisting categorization. She is the author of 15 works ranging from poetry, fiction, and drama to books about creative writing informed by psychoanalysis. Having recently reconnected with her mother tongue, her works in progress include Duel and Envol Do. Hush will be released in 2017 in the University of Western Australia Press Poetry Series.
Archive Fever. You are a tracker, bent close to the page, looking for traces and signs that sense has passed this way. You sniff for the scent of absence, but above all, feel for the gap in your life. The air is incandescent. The white page glows. Emptiness talks back, talks back, talks back to the heat that cracks open the world. This is a land of surfeit and lack, of hardness and clarity of image, of absence that opens out or closes up the world, and sometimes the heart. Necromancer. Between I and am is a fish out of water, thinking of oceanic distances. It walks streets unfurling shadows that augur a poem. Skin encoded with holes, heart ciphered with motives and metaphors meant merely to warn the line as it moves, stroke after stroke, promising the resurrection of the non-ego, as if the sun could take the hook from my mouth. The Age of Reason. High sun, champagne vignettes. A child conducts the off-track story of chocolate ants moving in single file, swats stray insects licking her father's face there, stone-like, on the clay, grittier sand. In Spain, where guitars strum to the wailing of women, clap-clapping of castanets, cadenzas of heels tapping, and the buzz of mosquitoes, nothing bears the moon better than the sky adrift in black. The child practices seven times tables, cocooned in light foliage, where the heat drops in a tangle of dreamlike semblance of shade flying through diaphanous spider webs at the exact point of loss. Deserted, the child wanders. Under the fig tree, stones and scarabs and lizards scurrying away in screaming absence offer some sense of no real consequence as the dark deepens further. The cow jumped over the moon. I have not looked outside since I papered the house, sealed all doors and windows. I have not seen the light thin to dark at sunset, the clouds that move fast in the sky, the moon dusting the buds that grow leaves. I have not seen the mold on the pomegranates. I have not hummed the roses dead on their smelly stems. I have eaten nothing, and nothing has eaten all the words in my mouth. I have not heard my son whose voice had just broken, "I have not touched his room."
Tusiata Avia is a Samoan New Zealand poet, performer, and writer. She has published 3 books of poetry, including Wild Dogs Under My Skirt, and her latest, Fale Aitu, Spirit House. Tusiata has held a number of writers' residencies and awards, including a Fulbright Pacific Artist Fellowship at the University of Hawaii and the Janet Frame Literary Trust Award. She lives in Auckland, New Zealand, with her daughter Sapela, and teaches creative writing and performing arts at the Manukau Institute of Technology.
Do you feel like dark or light? Light, all right. All right, one of each. We'll do a dark. We'll do a dark and we'll do a light. This is a list poem, and basically, as a Samoan girl, there are lots of things you can't do or you're not supposed to do. And this is basically a list of what I've been told, and no doubt every other Samoan girl has been told. Things that girls should know. Don't hang your panty outside. Don't forget to wash your panty in a shower, otherwise the ants will come and eat the dirty. Don't use the same towel as the boy. Don't comb your hair in the nighttime. Don't wear your hair out. Don't show your shoulder. Don't wear a trouser except in a town. Don't swim on a Sunday. Don't play on a Sunday. Yeah, it's better you don't do nothing on a Sunday. You just go to the church, stay home, yeah, go to sleep. Don't sleep in a lover-lover only. Don't sleep by yourself. Don't walk by yourself, especially in the dark. And don't forget to cover a mirror at the night time. Eh, don't answer back. Shh, don't be the show off. Don't kokalaikiki. Don't fear poko. Don't kafau vale. Don't make a round. Don't make the friend with the boy. Don't make the bad thing with the boy. Don't drink or smoke or go to the nightclub. Weloa, I said, don't you drink or smoke or go to the nightclub. Remember, girls, obey your parents. Then you will live long in the land. All right, one more. Do you want an ode? Do you want a good English ode? Yeah? Okay. Let's do an ode. So in the best tradition of the English ode, here is an ode. You want an ode? Okay, I give you. Hear my ode to the life. Yeah, the life is happy and perfect. Everybody's smile, everybody's laugh, lot of food like bisupo, McDonald, and sapasui. Even the dog they fed. You hear me, Suma? Even the dog. And all the palangi, they very happy to us. They say, hey, come over here to New Zealand. Come and live with us and eat the ice cream and watch TV too every day, days of our lives, every day, Hope and Bo and Roman and Tony DeMira. That's how I know my old Tudor life. And also Jesus. I not forget Jesus. He said to us, now you can do anything you like. Have the boyfriend, drink the beer, anything. Even in front of your father. And never ever get the hiding. Just happy and laughing every time.
We'll be bringing you a fascinating extended interview with Tusiata in the new year. Merlinda Bobbis, a Filipino-Australian, is the author of 3 novels, 5 poetry books, 7 dramatic works for stage and radio, a collection of short stories, and a monograph on writing and researching fiction. Her works have received various awards, among them the Prix Italia, the Philippine National Book Award, the Philippine Balaktas Award, the Australian Writers Guild Award, and the Ian Reid Radio Drama Prize.
And just a context for the first poem. The Philippines was colonized by Spain for more than 350 years, and it began in 1521 when the explorer Ferdinand Magellan planted the Spanish flag on the islands. And he had with him the Italian chronicler, Pigafetta. Have you heard of him? Pigafetta, who chronicled the circumnavigation of the globe and the discovery of the Philippines. While James Cook, as you know, in the 1700s, chronicled his own circumnavigation of the Antarctic and the discovery of Australia in his journal. Now, I found, because I'm reviewing both texts, I found similarities in their one particular image keeps cropping up. And this is also an image that you find in many colonial stories, First Contact. And the poem is my response. The string of beads. Between Magellan and Cook is a string of beads, bright, sparkly trinket from their side of the world, and how exotic to the native eye. But neither men would dream of circling them around the necks of their wives. Beatriz and Elizabeth, awaiting news at home, wishing for the ark to come full circle, leave-taking and homecoming finally knotted like those urgent deals with the natives. Your water for my beads, your fish for my mirror. See how it sparkles around your neck, a noose around the world. My string of beads, it's trade, free and fair. But sometimes we improvise to ease the hand that gives and takes. So beware the string of beads. The children knew this then and now. In an orphanage, 9-year-old Dina embroiders a collar, 30 pesos apiece, to circle the neck of a lovely lady in Sydney. How nice. The poor dear has a job. So beware the string of beads. Its reach is long, far away and endless. A knot is tied around your neck even before more beads are sooner improvised. So be vigilant. There is something eternal about rapacious kindness. Cook, Magellan, Columbus launched big voyages across the open sea. Refugees have done the same until now, as have animals and birds, but which are allowed or refused passage? Migrations. When leatherbacks stop foraging off the coast of California, then mating en route to Oahu, transiting through West Papua, and nesting in Bundaberg. When whales stop their great sonar voyages, when Arctic terns stop circumnavigating the globe in a tireless embrace, when caribou stop their epic trek season after season, when monarch butterflies stop turning the sky ochre through 3,000 miles because water, air, land have sprouted elemental barricades no flipper, fin, tail, or wing can cross, then we can stop the boats. Stop the urge to feed, to mate, to nest. Stop the wish to greet a kinder sun. We often think of the big arcs in the movements of peoples and animals since the beginning of time. Migration, seeking refuge, and of course colonization. But there are also smaller arcs that we barely see. Arc of arcs. I am in awe of quarter turns, presaging revolution. Toes pivot east towards the roses. Bloomed, yes, as she labored, announcing me. Mama grew them too in Manila, her mother said. So in Perth, Elena turns eastward, stretching toes, ankles, thighs before a run, and heel digs its dream of wells. Calcaneus, heel bone, stubborn to the max, digs in, twists, burrows on red earth. This is my country. Wells deep with water, not steam, so frack off. And waste swivels against a palm. Oh, the arc of it, that silk, that moist moment, that almost love in the dance hall, kept safe, deep in his gunner's palm, taut and ready. Come on, take a swing. And Nick snaps to the right. Yet, the twinge is in her left shoulder, ripples down her back as she ducks in time the fist, the whitest knuckle as she breathes to the top of her lungs. You fucking bastard. And wrist wakes to an intent, the axis, friend to the arc, even before it's born or reborn, from fist to palm. Here, Miriam. Here, Ahmed. Here, Yaya. Here, fish. Here, bird. Here, my hand. Take it. So, I am in awe of quarter turns, or even less. The toes, heel, waist, neck, wrist, know them before we even know them. Herald to the full circle, oh, the arc of arcs, towards the roses. Homage to Gran, who grew them too, towards redreaming wells, to how we used to dream them, towards the girl who brings him home, towards free air to breathe us free, towards the stranger turning us even stranger to who we think we are, sometimes fixed, riveted, unmoving, unmoved. If one thinks of the movement of people since the beginning of time, one has to think bigger, even in a small love poem. Love is planetary. From the first urge, no, from the inkling of an urge, perhaps way before time, before the Big Bang, when black holes, matter and antimatter and space were yet light years unknown to each other. This is the astronomy of our chance to meet, even with the most strange, most distant, and evolve by accident something even stranger, a ringed planet, a newborn star, or this thing called Earth. So, sweetheart, from the other side of the globe, ocean, river, field, mountain, wall, barbed wire, or the border of tanks and guns, faceless yet to each other, there is hope for us.
Samuel Wagan Watson hails from an honourable ancestry of Munanjali, Gaelic and Germanic peoples. He is a full-time writer and raconteur based in Brisbane and uses various forms of poetics to complete his work. Collections of Samuel's poetry have received premieres awards in Queensland and New South Wales. He's reading here from his Ipsy chapbook, Monsters, Inc.
Once again, thank you to Ipsy for this, because most of these poems didn't make the cut for love poems and death threats. The publisher felt they weren't good enough, and it allowed me to explore my writing style. I've just been wanting to tighten my style so much. Maybe one day I'll be a good writer. A brief biography. I am 175 centimetres tall, with a width that fluctuates seasonally. I live in a house with many mirrors, as opposed to a domicile of glass that will only canvas certain reflections. I do not sleep in a room with an open cupboard. There is residual paralysis down my left side from a right brain hemorrhage, ghosting a portside eye that sports a shade of constant blood. The bad eye retains some poker's concentration from the off-white colour of my skin. I get paid to write poetry, and like my body weight, the workload fluctuates from fat to healthy. I solve textual cases with some folk that can't solve them themselves. Sleep apnea comes knocking at my door frequently. Loaded gun sleeping. Stars sparkle their alibis. A moon shines witness. At the age of 43, I am partial to writing poetry on a 24-hour basis, with the object of uncovering monsters in the ink of paper trails. Today's monsters are not found in lurid shadows or dank hovels, and are morphic to the warped fantasies of dreamers. They are respected kin of a closed society that dwell in towers of ivory with little room for ebony. To find today's monster, one need only look for capacity and clue in the traces left from acts of sin, wrath, greed, sloth, pride, lust, envy, and gluttony. This next piece, I was invited to the Governor General's residence at the Governor General of Queensland to be appointed the Indigenous Poet in Residence, and apparently I should have checked in with his protocols team about what poem I should have read. Hell, I thought it'd be a good poem. No entry any time. No Viet Cong ever called me a nigger. Muhammad Ali, heavyweight boxing champion of the world, circa 1967. Restraining orders come natural to me. This isn't my country. Unless the federal court deems it so, I'm not welcome here, I'm not welcome there. And once or twice, a potential mother-in-law has not wanted black babies to soil the same name of her untarnished heritage. No trespassing, no right, no wrong, no service, no justice, no law, and only New World Order, non-transferable tickets, no entry any time. But in a beautiful hindsight, no refugee has ever called me a nigger. Words reserved for chairs, the reserved seating only. My elders removed from their country by brutal force, and whoever survived were placed in a concentration of cultures on reserves. I am a refugee in my own country. But no refugee has ever called me a nigger. Anti-terror lawmakers want citizens to be vigilant sheep, robotic drone warfare, protecting borders that are only physical, while a psychological war has been waged for over 200 years. Royal commissions and deaths in custody that shouldn't have been borders. But a guilty cop purging himself truthfully is a good outcome because he has indemnity. Poor fucking fellow. We can't invade his privacy. His nightmare is constrained to his victim's ghost. A refugee in this landscape of card-carrying victims' ghosts, we are all ghosted by killers. Card-carrying uniforms, access all areas. This country is one big game reserve. Open season anytime for some and no protection for others. And those who ask for protection, well, restraining orders come naturally to me. Both no refugee has ever called me a nigger. Welcome to Australia. Wrong way, go back. No entry any time. Look, thank you, Tipsy. And the one good thing about the Queensland Poetry Festival last month, resurgence of poetry and people wanting to know about what's happening down here at University of Canberra. So, look, I tell you, I'm going home and I'm letting them know you guys rock. Thank you.
To finish, we hear from Simon Armitage. Simon has published over a dozen collections of poetry, including his latest selected poems, Airplane. He is Professor of Poetry at the University of Sheffield and was recently appointed to be Professor of Poetry at Oxford University.
Dear universe, I shaved this morning. Look at these fine black pinpricks constellated in the white sink. The new moon of this nail clipping proves I'm alive, and once every couple of months I regrow a fringe. Universe, it's against you I measure myself. The laws of thermodynamics are calling my warm atoms into deep space. But for now, I'm holding this hair, these bristles, this middle finger up to your smug face. The christening. I am a sperm whale. I carry up to 2.5 tons of an oil-like balm in my huge coffin-shaped head. I have a brain the size of a basketball, and on that basis alone am entitled to my opinions. I am a sperm whale. When I breathe in, the fluid in my head cools to a dense wax, and I nosedive into the depths. My song, available on audio cassette and compact disc, is a comfort to divorcees, astrologists, and those who have pitched the quavering canvas tent of their thoughts on the rim of the dark crater. The oil in my head is of huge commercial value and has been used by NASA, for even in the galactic emptiness of deep space, it does not freeze. I am attracted to the policies of the Green Party on paper, but once inside the voting booth, my hand is guided by an unseen force. Sometimes I vomit large chunks of ambergris. My brother, Jeff, owns a camp in an outdoor clothing shop in the Lake District and is a recreational user of cannabis. Customers who bought books about me also bought Do Whales Have Belly Buttons by Melvin Berger and Street Maps of Cardiff. In many ways, I have seen it all. I keep no pets. Lying motionless on the surface, I am said to be logging and lobtailing when I turn and offer my great slow fluke to the horizon. Don't be taken in by the dolphins and their winning smiles. They are the pickpockets of the ocean, the gypsy children of the open waters, and they are laughing all the way to Atlantis. On the basis of finders keepers, I believe the Elgin Marble should remain the property of the British Crown. I am my own god. Why shouldn't I be? The first people to open me up thought my head was full of sperm. But they were men, and had lived without women for many weeks, and were far from home. Stuff comes blurting out. And I'm just going to... Came we then to the place above mentioned, crossed its bristled threshold through robotic glass doors, entered its furry heat, its flesh-toned fluorescent light. Thus with wire-wrought baskets we voyaged, and some with trolleys, back wheels flipping like trout tails, cruised the narrow canyons twixt cascading shelves, the prow of our journeying cleaving stale air. Legion were the items that came tamely to hand. 5 stainless steel teaspoons, 10 corn relief plasters, the Busy Bear pedal bin liners fragranced with country lavender, the Disney design calendar and diary set, 3 cans of Vimto, cornucopia of potato-based snacks and balm for a sweet tooth, toys and games, goods of Orient made and of Cathay, all under the clouded eye of CCTV, beyond the hazard cone where serious chutney spillage had occurred. Then emerged Souls, the duty manager with a face like Doncaster. I don't really know what I mean by that. Although, in my defense, I did read that line in Doncaster once, and it seemed to be fine. The duty manager with a face like Doncaster, mumbling, "For so much, what shall we give in return?" The blood-stained employee of the month, sobbing on a woolsack of fun-fur rugs. Many uniformed servers, spectral, drifting between aisles. Then came Elpenor, our old friend Elpenor, slumped and shrunken by the seasonal products display. In strangled words I managed, "How art thou come to these shady channels, into hell's ravine?" And he, "To loan sharks I owe the bone and marrow of my all." Then Walt Whitman, inquiring politely of the delivery boy, and from special occasions came forth Tiresias, dead in life, alive in death, cider-scented and sockless, Oxfam-clad, shaving cuts to both cheeks. And my own mother, reaching out, slipping a tin of stewing steak to the skirt pocket of her wedding dress, blessed with a magician's touch, practiced in need. But never until the valley widened at the gated brink did we open our lips to fish out those corn-coloured coins, those minted obols, hard-won tokens graced with our monarch's head, kept hidden beneath the tongue's eel, blood-tasting, both ornament and safeguard, of armour made. And paid forthwith, then broke surface and breathed extraordinary daylight into starved lungs, steered for home through precincts and parks scalded by polar winds, laden with whatnot, lightened of golden quids. Thank you very much.
This has been Poetry on the Move. I'd like to thank our guests Dominique Heck, Tusiata Avia, Merlinda Bobbis, Samuel Wagan Watson, and Simon Armitage. And thank you to all our guests throughout 2016. We look forward to joining you again next year. This podcast is made possible by IPSI, the International Poetry Studies Institute, and the Center for Creative and Cultural Research, Faculty of Arts and Design at the University of Canberra. Thank you for listening.